Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to yet another episode of The Playlist Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, Managing Editor of The Playlist. And for this episode, I return with a new interview I recently conducted with a couple of the writers, Kaz and Ryan Firpo, from the Marvel Studios film Eternals. What's really interesting in this interview is that you probably don't know the names Kaz Firpo and Ryan Firpo, and that's for good reason. Eternals marks their major studio film debut as writers, having done plenty of documentary work in the past. And if you're wondering how the Firpo cousins went from being relative unknowns to crafting a $200 million blockbuster, you're in luck, because they talk about their story and how they went from writing a spec script for fun to landing a pitch with Kevin Feige. It's pretty incredible stuff, honestly. But from there, we go into specifics about Eternals. I will warn you, the second half of the interview does get into spoilers about the film, so listen at your own risk. We talk about which characters didn't make the cut, including some surprising villains in Eternals that were considered early on in the process. We also talk about some of the choices made by characters that have already shocked audiences. Needless to say, if you're looking for an Eternals discussion with folks that have some insider info, this one's for you. But before we get to that interview, I got to tell you the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Be Real, The Fourth Wall, Deep Focus, The Discourse, and more. And if you want to find us, you can check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, or anywhere else you find your favorite shows. Also, just to let you know, my friends and playlist cohorts, Mike D'Angelo and Rodrigo Perez, have just launched the first episode of their new podcast, Yellowstoners. And if the title isn't explicit enough, the new weekly show is going to dissect the hit cowboy drama Yellowstone. And of course, it's dissected by two guys that are about the furthest thing from cowboys. So that should be fun. So check it out. Their first episode's out now, and listen weekly if you follow Yellowstone or just want to talk about, you know, a guy from Wisconsin and a guy from New York City talking about cowboys. With that all out of the way, I'm happy to play for you my recent interview with Eternals writers Kaz and Ryan Firpo. Enjoy. Welcome, guys. Nice to meet you.
Before, thank you for having us.
Yeah, of course. Before we dive deep into Eternals, I think a lot of people are going to notice your names and look at IMDb and notice there isn't a lot there. Not that there's anything bad about that. It's just surprising that your first major movie is Eternals. So I'm curious if you guys want to kind of give background really on how you landed Eternals, because I think maybe I'm wrong and you can correct me, but I think I read somewhere that Marvel kind of has like a bullpen set up where they let young writers kind of pitch movies and stuff like that. So maybe you guys can shine some light on that.
I think that bullpen probably does exist. We've never seen it. And if it is, maybe it's deep below the earth, in a cavern somewhere. No, we actually come from a very specific filmmaking background. You know, we both just love movies. We're filmmakers who write. And it was really, it's certainly an interesting journey. We've told the story a couple of times, so it's floating out in the ether, but we will sort of give you the quick telling. Ryan and I basically are both directors. We used to, we've done everything from feature-length documentaries about the rise and fall of online poker to short documentaries about the refugee crisis in Syria and Lebanon, you know, and so we've sort of traveled all over the world and told a lot of different kinds of stories. But really, this journey began with Ryan and I writing a screenplay. We basically wrote this script in a cabin in the woods. We didn't have agents. We didn't have managers. We didn't have that uncle we could pick up a phone and say, hey, can you get us that Hollywood meeting? It really was just a matter of saying, you know, I'm tired of shooting wedding videos, which is a true story. I shot so many wedding videos when I was in school. I went to NYU Film School out in New York. And I called the best writer I knew, who I happened to be related to, was Ryan. And I basically said, like, let's write that movie, you know, that we can go make. Let's go write a movie so we can stop being the guys thinking and dreaming about making movies. We can be the guys that are like, making a movie. And so we wrote this script called Ruin. I mean, really, we didn't have any connection to Hollywood. It was an original idea. And the best part, you know, was kind of being free of the system. We weren't like, boy, we have to make audiences happy. This has to be studio friendly. You know, we didn't have that mission when we set out to tell the story. What we did want to do was to make something that we wanted to see and to make something that felt fresh and different. And frankly, just was a story that had never been told before. That's really where we approach so many of our stories. And actually, I think if you had to look at one unifying thread beyond like systems of power and humanity that we bring to a lot of these movies, what it really comes down to is that we're really interested in finding new stories, new perspectives that haven't been told. So Ruin is really the story of revenge set 6 months after the end of World War II. And we ended up, through a tenuous Hollywood connection from a documentary I was shooting in for UNICEF on the island of Jamaica, the producer of that project introduced me to her sister's fiancé, it's all true story, who ended up becoming Sam Warren, our incredible manager, along with Harry Langsfeld, who really changed our lives. I mean, they read this script, they call us on the phone, they said, when can you be in LA? It really was that like Hollywood dream story. And we sort of just met each other at the right time. That script got like loaded into a Hollywood shotgun and blasted out into the entire stratosphere. We ended up taking about 70 meetings over the course of a few weeks, just like boom, 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 like, hi, this is who we are. This is what we're working on. This is what we're doing next. And one of those meetings ended up being with Nate Moore, a producer over at Marvel, who was working on a little movie at the time called Black Panther. We'd never heard of it. Nobody knew what it was going to be. But we really just hit it off. We had a lot of chemistry. And then that same script, Ruin, ended up winning the Blacklist in Hollywood, which is sort of the list of unmade screenplays that people seem to really like. We were very proud to do it. It was a great honor. It really changed our lives, and it really put us on the radar. So when we got back on the phone, or we got back in the room, really, I feel like once upon a time we actually got to like have lunch and talk about movies in person. I sort of forget about that. We sat down with Nate, and he said, I have a crazy little story for you. Would you be interested in writing The Eternals? And I'll let Ryan talk about the pitch process.
Yeah, I mean, he brought us in and talked about Eternals, and like many people, we had no idea what that was.
And, how dare you?
And I'll get to that later. But so he brought us in, but then when he started telling us about the story and all the kind of narrative potential for it, we just really kind of we fell in love with it right away. And it just there's so much crossover for the things that we're personally interested in as people and as storytellers that we just knew right away this has to be the movie that we win. Because you know, obviously everyone, or not everyone, but many people would want to write a Marvel movie. And we would count ourselves amongst those people, but it wasn't just a Marvel movie. It was this movie specifically, you know, it was Eternals that we really wanted to write. So that became our sort of holy grail that we were just like, we have to win this job. And we entered into the pitch process. And, so basically they gave us this, document that was like 700 pages long and included like all the Eternals runs that there's ever been, including all these like bios for all different Eternals characters. Maybe there was like 40 to 50 different Eternals that they had like dense 3-page bios on and just like all this stuff. And they were just essentially like, okay, so take that and make a movie out of it. And so then we went into my little office in Pasadena and just started, you know, kicking ideas around and brainstorming. And then over the course of about 5 weeks, we refined this pitch, and we would go in and pitch it to Nate and this executive, Zoe Naglehoot at Marvel. And they just helped us kind of like keep condensing it and making it better, polishing it. And so finally, then we got to pitch the big guys, Kevin and Lou, and we sat down in the Iron Man room at the Marvel offices. And so we're just like, you know, we're doing this pitch and there's like Iron Man artwork all around us. And Tony Stark is just kind of looking over Kevin's shoulder, just saying, you better do a good job. And so we pitched Kevin and Lou, and it was probably like a 90-minute pitch of just us telling like the whole story. Wow. And the whole time it just kind of sat there just really stone-faced, you know, and not really giving a lot of reaction. And really, I pride myself on being able to kind of judge people and see, engage where they're at. I could not really tell in that room how they were feeling. Kaz was much more optimistic. He felt like really good about the meeting, but I was kind of like, I don't really know. And so anyway, we did that pitch. And then within a few days, actually, we got that fateful call that we got the job, and that really kind of changed our lives.
Wow. So I'm curious, when was this exactly? Like what year roughly?
It was in 2018, like the early 2018, I think maybe like February or March or something.
Wow. So yeah, you guys have been sitting on this movie for 3 years. Obviously there was a big delay in the middle of that too, that you couldn't predict. But it is a long time coming. I'm curious at the beginning, because I think Chloe recently mentioned that there were more Eternals in the movie. And you mentioned you were given like 40 or 50 or however many there are a ton.
Right.
Do you know which ones you were trying to get in there that you just, you know, were like, oh, we got to pare it down to 10.
Oh yeah. Do we know, you know, we wrote about 4 drafts with those characters in it. You know, the journey for us was really interesting, because what happened is, you know, you're sitting in a windowless room at the Marvel headquarters, you've gotten the job, and now you have all this raw material and you're trying to shape it into something big and different and special. And, you know, Marvel does an incredible job of supporting artists in that quest to do something new. But very specifically, it's like, you know, you're writing this movie, and we wrote, you know, 2 drafts of the movie before that director conversation started. So we started like watching films from these directors who were interested in making the movie. And, you know, at the time, Chloe had made 2 really brilliant but very small films. And when we saw the writer, we knew right away that that was the movie we wanted to see, and the person, you know, we wanted to collaborate with. And so when Chloe read the draft, the first script that we had already written, you know, it had 12 Eternals. It had 12 characters, and those 2 characters who we love dearly, but it's just, you know, 10 is a lot. So try doing that with a full dozen. And really, when you throw Crow in there, it's a baker's dozen. But it was the Eternal Zuris, who was sort of the leader in the comics or the canon, and it was the Eternal Valken, who was sort of a healer. And what we did, you'll kind of see it pretty clearly in the film. Zuris was really folded very neatly into Ajak as the leader, and into Gilgamesh sort of as the sort of surly, salty older man. And the same thing happened with Valken. There was too many powers to keep track of, too many arcs, and we folded his powers into Ajax and sort of just his role a little bit into Kingo. So it's really about taking those constituent parts and making sure that everything can be a little deeper, a little more full.
Just to add to that, like in terms of choosing the original core, I mean, you know, we were obviously influenced by the comic runs, you know, and particularly like the Gaiman run. But then we started doing things like gender flipping certain roles, and we gender flipped Sprite because we wanted to create this this kind of what is it called? Lovelorn? Like this ache that she had that for all the centuries that she's been in love with Icarus. And so we did all these things to give it like our own spin. And it's actually really funny because like I've been thinking of Sprite as female for so long that now I actually forgot that in the comics that it's Sprite as a male. So it's interesting.
Makari is the other one for me. Like I've read the comics and I'm like, Makari is a guy, right? And then, you know, we've been talking about Eternals for so long now that I was looking at the wiki. I'm like, oh shit, you're right. He was a dude.
It was really, for us, it was about finding the most interesting dynamics, you know, and we have a lot of love for everything that Jack Kirby did and then his whole Gonzo universe. I mean, Eternals is really a love letter to that big ambition. But most importantly, you know, when you're crafting this family, we really wanted to see and bring really unique perspectives. And it was like right away, you know, we'd seen that fast guy so many times in so many stories, and even Marvel had done their take on it. And we love Quicksilver, we love the Flash. I mean, they're all great characters, but we just wanted to see it done a little differently. And then from that conversation, it's like, well, if you make a sonic boom every time you start running, wouldn't it be useful, you know, if you actually were shielded from that naturally? So that's where sort of this idea and this conversation about having, you know, a different kind of superhero and bringing Lauren, it was like she was the only person who could bring that character to life so perfectly and beautifully. And so that sort of diversity of characters from talent all the way came from the page. It came from those original conversations that we wanted to try to do something new.
Right. So speaking of new and speaking of, you know, speedsters, so to speak, this movie, one of the things people are noticing, and it's pretty obvious, is Eternals is unlike other Marvel movies in that it kind of sheds the every guy story and really does focus on gods and myths and immortals and things like that, which on paper sounds a little bit more like that other company and their superheroes, DC. So I'm curious, when you guys are writing the script and you're crafting these characters, was that ever a distinction in your mind? Like, okay, this is a different type of Marvel movie that is similar to that Superman, Flash, Green Lantern sort of universe.
I'd be the first to say that I don't think that when you set out to tell, this might just be us, but I certainly hope it's the way it works. You know, when you set out to make a movie, you don't go like, oh, I want it to be like this movie or not like this movie. You know, you want it to be true to the people the characters that are at the heart of the story. I have a lot of love for what DC does with their movies, but you know, that's their universe and they're playing in their sandbox. And I think Marvel has a really unique visual language and frankly, a really unique sandbox on their own. So for us right away, this movie came from like a big idea, which is essentially about responsibility, the sort of the loyal soldier is responsible to a mission, and the love that you have for someone, for a family, for your family, and sort of being caught between those two things. And so that's inherently just a morally gray concept. It's not as simple as being like, well, we're fighting a villain and the villain is bad and we kill the villain, we win. You know, what you're really grappling with is ideology. And that's something that's true of humanity as much as it's true of eternal space gods. You know, and I think that was the guiding light for the project, was to try to introduce a new universe, go out into the weirds of the cosmic, you know, Kirby world, but then at the same time to really look backwards and to look at, as you said, gods and myths and maybe these immortal aliens and their spaceship, you know, inspired a lot of human civilization, you know, and started those conversations, who knows. But yeah, there's definitely some winking nods to DC, if only because they exist in our world and maybe they exist in this world too.
Yeah. So now I'd like to actually talk a little bit about spoilers stuff. The movie's out, so, you know, we're gonna get into a little bit here. One of the things that I think people are noticing also and is great is Kit Harington and his, mm-hmm. He has kind of a small role in the movie as Dane Whitman. I think people were assuming that maybe it was a larger role, but as a fan of the comics, I know Dane Whitman has a Eternals link. And so yeah. I'm curious if he was always that character for you guys, or if it was like kind of something towards the end, you're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we threw this guy in?
Well, yeah. So like I said, you know, when we first started pitching on Eternals, we didn't really know anything about it. So we were just reading and researching. And I remember early on reading about Dane Whitman and he was, we like actually on this wall right behind me, there usually is bulletin board. And we put up all these cards of potential characters we'd like to see in the movie. And Dane was one of those characters that we put up, particularly because I did read an aspect in one run or that he actually was a physicist. And so he was jilted by Cersei and he discovered how to travel into the multiverse. So he basically went to all the different dimensions and was killing all the Cerseis who existed in the multiverse. And I was like, they'll never do that in a Marvel movie or TV show. But I was like, that's a really crazy idea. And that's a really interesting character. So he was kind of like planted in our minds early of like, this would be a great human character to get into the a story about immortal space gods. And then through the writing process, there was a lot of different narrations, you know, where Cersei, you know, she was single in the present day, you know, or and kind of went back and forth. And then it got like slowly refined down to the point where we thought, okay, yeah, it would be a good idea to bring Dane in because he can do a lot for the story and for Cersei as a character, but also like create this great platform for Kit to jump off and do something with Dane and the Black Knight.
So another thing that kind of surprised me when I first watched the movie, and this is a spoiler, but you know, it's not that bad. One of the things that you don't see in superhero movies is a superhero deciding to step away and, you know, just say, I'm not going to play in the big third act battle. But Kingo does that in this movie. Mm-hmm. Was that something you guys always thought was important for the core of the story? Or is that just, you know, kind of a subversion that you guys were thinking about as well?
I would like to think that we never make choices to like for like you know just to make a choice, like to mess with the audience or to like say like you expected us to do this, we're doing that, you know, like I hope that we don't make those choices. And for me, like Kingo's choice was always kind of essential, just both for who he is as a character and kind of what he represents for the group as a whole. You know, I think that for Kingo that it's about his belief system, you know, and it's about the fact that he shares Icarus's belief system up to the point of hurting his other family members. Like he'll take it so far, but he won't hurt anyone else that he loves, which is why he steps away. But I think also there's another layer too, that Kingo has been really invested in humanity. He's been living as a human, you know, as a Bollywood star for multiple generations. And he's taken on a lot of human characteristics, you know, like ego, being one of his main eccentricities. And so I think that too, he's become a lot more aware of mortality and appreciative of a fleeting moment. And I think when he does step away at the end, like, he's also, it's out of a fear, like he doesn't want to die, you know, like, so he
Ruin his career.
Yeah, it would ruin his career, exactly. Yeah,
so we always want choices to be made, you know, by based on the ideology of a character of a person. So yeah, for sure, I don't think any writer at the end of the day is saying like, this will just really mess with people, and that is sort of, it's about subversion.
Yeah,
it's hard to say. But for us especially, it's Kingo is, he represents the many sides of the coin. You know, this movie really began with that fundamental idea going all the way towards sort of our big third act twist. That was always the intrinsic part of the story, which is that, you know, if you have a soldier and you're torn between your duty as a soldier and your response and your love for your family, like, where do you land on that spectrum? And that's really what the film's asking you. As an individual, as an audience member, as a person, Icarus falls on one end of that spectrum, the rest of the Eternals fall on the other, and Kingo, very firmly, he sort of stands in this middle ground where he does believe in his mission. He believes that what they're doing is right, but he won't go to war for it, and he won't kill for it. And I think that's really important to represent that, you know, in these difficult decisions, that they're a continuum, you know, they're not black and white.
Right. So we got to start wrapping up, but I do want to ask one other question about the, we mentioned Dane Whitman kind of being one of the characters. You're like, wouldn't this be cool if we put him in there? Were there other characters that you guys got deep into the lore that you were interested in getting? And then through the drafts, other than the Eternals, maybe, but maybe some supporting characters that just, or allusions to other MCU films that just didn't make it?
I would say that I was introduced to Kang through my research into Eternals, and I was like really fascinated by him, and obviously
the time stuff.
Waldron and Loki, yeah, has kind of brought him to life in a really exciting way. So, but yeah, he was also somebody that I was like, oh, this could be cool, especially because we're dealing with immortality. We're dealing with there were even versions in the pitch where we were thinking that Kang could have gotten involved and sort of messed up the Eternals timeline a little bit, but then it just, you know, we kind of steered away from that. But yeah, he was somebody who I was really fascinated by.
Kaz, you got anybody?
There's no one like specifically from the lore, you know, there's about 100 plus Eternals, you know, I'll say that much. And each one of them is fascinating in different ways. But, you know, right away, we always knew that this was going to be a huge movie, you know, and its themes and its ambitions, but we really wanted it to be a family story, you know, really, truly like the circus family that comes together and falls apart and comes back together. So I really feel like, you know, at the end of the day, it's a story about what it means to be human through the lens of these immortal gods. I'm really happy with the characters we chose. I think it would have been fun to, you know, spend time with all 97 Eternals that we didn't get to meet, but maybe we'll save that for a television show.
Yes, 88 seasons, 80 episodes of a TV show. Yeah.
Each episode is just one Eternal hanging out.
Yeah. Well, I got to wrap up, but thank you guys so much for going through all this. It's a fascinating story, and I think it's pretty awesome that you guys were able to kind of, you know, not come from nowhere, but, you know, then just be like, bam, Eternals. So congratulations,
guys.
Well,
I like to say, Charles, thank you very much. I have to say, and this is for anyone who's listening, it's like you're always one great project away from being what you want to be. You know, if you want to write a script, like, you just, that one great script can change your life. It's the same thing with a movie or a commercial or a short documentary. And I really think that, like, by setting your mind to something, really achieving that one thing, it opens so many doors you couldn't possibly expect. That's certainly been the case for us. And I think that's meant to encourage anyone who works in cinema and film and TV and just is passionate about this stuff. You know, you don't need permission to start telling a great story. So really,
Knows, Marvel might send you a 700 page document down the line.
They might call you and they might email you. So thank you, Charles, this was a pleasure, really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.